Thank you. So the goal of this session is to discuss a bit about the organization of the way that we are handling security issues in Xorg. Currently, as I presented it yesterday, we are using the Xorg security mailing list, but maybe this needs to change, or at least to be amended a bit to be more efficient. I have a number of points that I want to try to discuss today. The first one is how to get new people involved with the process of handling new issues. There are a number of issues currently waiting for someone to handle them on the mailing list. And as I said yesterday, waiting too long with embargoed issues is not a very good thing. So since those issues, at least three of them are quite easy to handle, I was expecting someone else to be able to handle them, and I didn't do anything. But this really doesn't seem to be a working strategy. So I hope we can find a better one. The second point, we will probably wait a bit to discuss it, because I've asked Benjamin to come here to discuss, but he's currently presenting a talk, and the next talk with Martin is also something he's interested in, and I would have probably listen to that talk too if I would not be there at the same time. But well, I will look at the replay later. So we will wait for Benjamin to discuss those issues. But basically, what I said quickly in the presentation yesterday is that there are some security issues that are already being handled through GitLab private issues, but I'm not sure if currently this is optimal, because I don't really know who has access to the private issues, and for the vendors to prepare patches, I don't know if they have access to the private issues, if they get some notification that there is some security issue that is being tracked as a GitLab private issue, and how the whole process of preparing the security advisory is being worked on in these cases. I've just discovered one of those issues being handled this way recently. So, but this was also a source of reflection for me earlier. For X server security issues, for example, we have been discussing patches on the mailing list rather than opening a GitLab issue. And so for the X server maintainer, it's a bit of a problem, because he gets to listen and to get some specific way to test patches, since they cannot be pushed to GitLab. Another thing that I wanted to discuss is if we need to keep the embargo for all the X server security issues, or if there are some categories of issues that can now be considered as not a security issue anymore, and that for which we can tell to people, just open a regular GitLab issue with the bug, and it will be fixed. And probably, if there is a patch available, the patch may emerge even faster than going through the whole security announcement process. Because most distributions currently ship X with the X server running without any specific privilege, so it's basically just a bug in an application. And the way for outside attackers to get data to the X server exploiting the bug, in my opinion at least, often really not completely straightforward. And maybe there are cases where we can say that clearly this has no impact on security, except for the few distributions that still ship X privilege, but they should really do something about this. And also, there is some general work that still needs to be done on X, even if X is dying. It's not dead yet, and it's probably going to be around still for at least a couple of years or more. So it would also be great if some people would volunteer either as some rough code projects or I don't know if you can get some money to sponsorize those developments to enhance things, fix remaining bugs. Maybe, well, I think one of the main thing that would help reducing the number of bugs is to actually use XCB to also generate the server side protocol coding and decoding. There are a lot of things to be done there because the code on the server side is much more different than on the Xlib side. On Xlib, it was already quite hard to do the change, but at that time, there was a motivated team of people working on that. Nowadays, those people have mostly switched to other tasks, so we cannot count on the original XCB developers to do that. And the same goes for the server side. Most of the people who developed this code on the server side are now gone, so we really need new people. And maybe other ideas. There were a lot of discussions about using Rust. Why not? Maybe we can implement a code generator that generates Rust for the protocol coding and decoding on the server side and compile this part using Rust. It's going to be even more difficult on some aspects to integrate it in the various distributions, but maybe it's a solution and a way to also attract more people. Coding protocol coders, decoders in Rust may be more attractive than doing it in C. So that's for the IDEs. Just I see two people following the workshop on Jitsi, but just as a follow Jitsi, maybe you can just tell us who you are and why you are here.
Hey, it's Alan. Been doing this with you for more years than I can keep track of now. And yeah, we need new people. We haven't really been reaching out to get them, but we need to start doing that somehow.
Okay. Thanks. So I don't know how to move on from there. Any input? Maybe I should try.
Well, one thing we haven't tried in a very long time is asking new people to join the list and help out. I don't know if we just want to put out a general call to like Xorg Devel, or if we want to try recruiting specific people, but we need new people somehow, and just waiting for them to show up and volunteer isn't working.
Yeah, and I don't know how many people actually attended the talk yesterday and got the message. So yes, maybe we can do a mail on Xorg Devel asking for help. And as I said, I wonder if moving to GitLab issues to actually report issues would be a good or not a good move or not.
Yeah,
maybe you have more information than I do on how.
I know I see the issues when they're reported privately, but I don't know who else does.
Yes, but for some of them, I even don't see them, and others, I can see a few of them, but not all of them. And I know that working with Matt Turner for the last Xorg security, the Xorg servers issues, he told me that he preferred to get the patches by email, that he didn't know really how it works. I don't know if since then I got some more information. Because that may be a nice way to handle the issue, to just move that to individual project maintainers, and they are responsible for handling this, and maybe we can get some. Some help from Benjamin to set up things so that people are packaging binaries for the Linux distributions and for the BSDs and get the information in advance that there is a new release available and that it will be made public at a given date.
So I do see in GitLab that for the Xorg group, I have the level of maintainer where you have developers. That may be why I see more than you do.
Connect since I cannot hear Denny.
No, it's.
Now I hear you.
So, what was I going to say? Yeah. So, what I've noticed is that some of the issues that I've reported haven't been fixed even after they were disclosed publicly. There was a CVE that I found in 2019, I disclosed in 2020. For local privilege escalation due to spoofing.
Yes, this one is really complex. Keith Packard did propose a patch, but no one really knew how to move forward with this because it introduced a large incompatibility, I think.
Can we? I think the best thing to do is to move the socket to a per user location.
Yes, one of my questions was if there are any applications that don't use Libix 11 to actually open the socket and that would get into trouble, but I don't know if it's the case.
Only one I'm aware there. Let's see there. I think there's a pure. There may be a pure Rust client, but that would be easy to patch.
Okay. Well, that's definitely something that needs to be put on and somehow back on the table, and that that needs to move forward. One of the issues that, as I said in previous emails to XR Security, and also said yesterday, is that I have less and less time to actually work on those aspects. And even just coordinating releases gets a bit difficult for me. But I can try to find ways to slowly move forward. There is also an issue between that it needs coordination between XServer and libraries releases, and that needs to be handled correctly by package managers. Because once you have installed a new library that will look for the socket somewhere else, it will fail to connect to the currently running server. Or we need a transition period where the library is looking at both faces.
I think, go ahead.
I was going to say, it's also going to cause a problem for anyone who has statically linked libraries, but I'm not sure we can do say much about that.
Can we just say we don't support that case?
Certainly for libx11, if you are purely statically linked, you lose a lot of stuff like input methods and other loadable objects.
Because I think, like when it comes to the spoofing issue, the only other solution I could think of required each client to implement some sort of the server authentication logic based on UIDs.
Right.
And I wasn't really sure if that was viable. So I think moving the socket's probably the best thing to do, but that does mean that there needs to be a place to put it. And given that home directory paths can be very long, that means that /run/user/UID needs to exist. And on OpenBSD, I don't think it does by default.
No, but we can create it. Systems like OpenBSD, except perhaps for the acceptance by other developers, are not that difficult to handle because it's really monolithic. And if we decide to change something, we can change it in the base system and in the X library at the same time. For me, Linux distributions are more difficult because they assemble parts coming from different maintainers.
I think, a thought I had was ship out a new X server/X display manager, whatever packages, and also ship out new client libraries and have the package dependencies be such that the new version of the server depends on the new client libraries and vice versa. So upgrading either requires upgrading both.
Yes, but still, if you upgrade the live running system, you will break the libraries. Once they are installed, they cannot connect to the running server anymore.
True. That is true. So I guess for system control restart, display manager service or whatever it is in a post install script.
Some distributions have moved to a Windows-like upgrade system where the upgrade are only installed part of a shutdown and reboot process.
Yeah.
On Solaris, with the boot environment, so it's not an issue. You upgrade.
Yeah, but otherwise, I think the best thing that could be done is just restart X in the post install scripts.
Nice. Yeah, on Solaris, we just force it to happen in a new boot environment, and then it'll come up after you reboot anyway. It won't affect the running system.
Yeah. For Fedora, I think, tries to use offline updates. I have very little experience with them because in KubeOS, they don't work. For various Cube-specific reasons. So, other than...
Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, so, what was I thinking? But yes, I think the best thing to do is just restart the X server once the upgrade is completed. That'll cause X clients to terminate, and when the user restarts them, they'll come up with the fix libraries will be working. Thoughts?
It's not something we can truly control from the Xorg side. We can just advise the distros on how to package it, but
like I think that's like the only reasonable option from what I can tell, because an incompatible change has to be made.
Yes. At least since the issue is already public, and this is the kind of things where we can discuss patches publicly on the X server GitLab and the libx11 GitLab, and publish a branch or something with the code so that people can actually try it and figure out the best way to integrate the updates on the distributions.
Actually, better idea.
Yes.
Have it so if changing the format of, so one of the patches that I think Alan Coopersmith has proposed is to allow specifying an absolute path to the socket. So that change on the client is backwards compatible. So upgrade the client library. So upgrade the client libraries, and then upgrade the display manager so that the display manager puts the new socket in the new path, and then a while later, change the meaning of :0 and such.
I don't remember writing that patch. That must have been one of Keith's proposals, but.
Or maybe, I forget if it was you or Keith Packard.
Yeah.
Sorry. But okay. It is on GitLab. Also, abstract socket support on Linux on the client needs to go. I have a MR for that. Because those are fundamentally unauthenticatable. Can that be reviewed?
Probably. As I said, the advantage of this is that since it's already public, it's not really XR security only problem.
Okay, yeah.
I think it unfortunately falls into the other problem X has, which is that there's just no one reviewing stuff that's, and the X server gets attention, but the rest of the apps and libraries really don't.
Yeah, but at least if we tell people, well, this change to the X server also requires a change to the X11 lib, and then people and XCB, and then people will at least if they want to test it, they will be required to also fetch the branches from X11 and XCB and test those.
And yeah, okay. I don't know how many people have notifications turned on to know that there's a patch for this waiting out in libx trans. We may just need to start poking people on the xorg devel IRC or mailing list to say, hey, this is in GitLab to be reviewed.
Yes, that was that's the role that I was thinking about for us, is just to
work. Could xorg security unilaterally merge the patch?
The list.
No, like as
I mean, I can. I have powers to merge patches in any of the X components. Matthew should.
Yes. But normally for the X server, there is a maintainer, and the merge should go through the maintainer.
Okay.
I've been reluctant to merge that patch because I don't work on a Linux distro. It doesn't affect me. I can't test it. Yeah, I can merge it and see if anyone complains. I was hoping someone like Ajax, who works on a Linux, would take a look at it. But
I think it.
Certain point, you know, it's been out there for almost a year now.
I think it's probably just best to go ahead and merge it and see if anyone complains.
Yeah.
I mean, at the very least, it shouldn't cause regressions. And the abstract sockets patch that I put out should be similar. I don't think it should cause any regressions in practice because all the servers also list on the named socket.
Yes, I don't remember when this was added, if it was for some systemd integration.
No.
If it's just someone who said, well, we have this abstract socket, why not support them in X? I don't remember.
I think it theoretically it could cause some sort of issues with certain container setups. That's the main catch. But given the
I thought it was just someone who is trying to avoid, oh, writing a socket in temp is insecure. It'll be less of a problem if we use this abstract namespace instead without realizing that it caused other issues instead.
Like, I think it's just best to go ahead and merge it and see if anyone complains, because I don't know. But then I'm also known for someone who is very heavy on C and I at the expense of A. So it's me saying I have my own biases. So, but like, I think it's probably best to, I don't know. Maybe let's talk about this later, because it's not. I'm sorry.
Yes, so this is one issue that, well, we should move forward, but there is nothing blocking. The other issue that you mentioned yesterday, so they are also almost public now, are the issues in the XCB client side. I also told that just before releasing the last Linux 11 patches, is that I wrote patches for Linux 11, but I saw that clearly the same kind of issues were existing in Linux CB. And for this, I don't know how to move forward. if someone has ideas on how to patch the code generator to add more checks there, or if we need to dive into this code to figure it out by ourselves.
As far as the existing code generator in Python, I'm not sure. However, I do know there is X11RB, which is X11 Rust bindings, and it does generate, and the code it generates does have those checks. Now that code is obviously in Rust, but I think it could, even if libxcb can't include Rust components, I imagine that the generator could be, like the logic in the generator could still be used. And also, I'm not sure if a build time dependency on Rust is okay, then the generator could be ported to generate C code. But if not, then the logic should be a good idea of how to do this.
I think the way to go is to first try to manually patch the generated C code to see what needs to be changed to the generated code, and then figure out where in the I'm not a professional Python developer, but I think I know enough of Python to figure out how to modify the generator once I know exactly where the extra checks should be added. And for this, someone should look at the generated C code. Normally,
I have an idea of one way to fix the generated C code. There's obviously several.
Okay, I've not looked at it, but normally, as far as I remember, one of the goals of XCB generator was to produce somehow readable code, so it should be.
It should be
possible to actually figure out how to patch the generated code on an example.
Yeah.
And then retro-engineer that into the generator.
My idea was to basically generate checked versions of the size of functions and the iterator routines that take a length argument and return an error if there's not enough space in the buffer. Actually, probably instead of a length argument, it'd be better for them to take an end pointer.
Trying to write down what we are saying.
And also, there's some changes that need to be made in libxcb and like libxcb itself, like the C parts. But those are much easier.
Yes.
And there's a change needed to add a check to make sure that at the very least the server sent enough bytes to fill the reply struct, but that's an easy change to make in the generator, and I've already done it.
Okay.
So I can help with that. If you can deal with the hard part is fixing up the generator, but I can come up with ideas for what the generated code should look like.
Yes, I think that if we have that, then it's probably not that hard to fix the generator.
Okay.
So I just wanted to check where the other talks are. Okay, Benjamin is finishing his talk, and then there is still the talk by Martin. So I don't know if anyone, Demi or someone else, is motivated by trying to also start working on converting the X server side to generated code.
I would be, it's something that I would find personally very interesting. It is not something that I am at all likely to have time for because my time is basically taken by Cube's work. I think obviously fixing the security issues on the client side is a prerequisite to using it on the server side, because otherwise we would have a security regression. I think
We have a mixed server release coming soonish. This one is not going to be fixed for this. And I don't even know if the pending issues that were reported is going to be part of this release or if it's going to be a separate release.
I think
that it would be switching to generated code would definitely close this kind of issues. And then Linux server could mostly be considered as complete from the security point of view, because we got rid of most of the font parsing issues, since everything is done by free type, so this is outside of our scope.
Is there a way we can turn off, can some features of X just be turned off by default? I'm thinking specifically byte swapped clients, maybe even parts of the core protocol nobody uses.
Well, that's a good question. It's true that since most of the clients are local nowadays, all the swapping code is mostly unused.
Yeah, I have been wondering about just turning off byte swapping support if you're running on local sockets only, because technically you can still enable it if you write a custom client to go into via the swapped paths.
Are there...
There's no real reason you should be able to. It's there, you can, but why?
I seem to remember there was something about PowerPC or Power where there were, which had something, it was some sort of bi-endian processor.
Yes. I know there have been processors where you can choose the endian depending on, you know, which OS you're running, but I don't remember any that let you switch on the, to have some applications running big endian and some small.
I think there was something with KV, somebody was running, I don't know. I just remember seeing a bug report about that because someone pointed me to it.
It certainly seems like something we could turn off by default. And, you know, if you're running on a bi-endian power PC platform, well, then you have to compile it in.
Maybe at the time where Apple switched from PowerPC to Intel.
I know what it was.
The emulator was probably running Intel and Little Indian and PowerPC code and Big Indian.
Yeah, that would make sense if you're running an emulated PowerPC client on an x86 processor.
I think this particular one was actually, whatchamacallit. Oh yeah, I think this had something to do with KVM. I think somebody was running a little endian or a big endian KVM guest on a little endian host or vice versa or something on power, and somehow they got shim working because the bug was that byte swapping and MIT SHM didn't work or something like that.
I mean, I know on Solaris our builds would leave the byte swapping support enabled because we have a lot of, I mean, our customers, they'll try to run a Spark application displayed remotely to an x86 desktop or laptop, and
yeah,
we get bug reports on that. But
also,
that's not the case for 90% of Linux users.
Oh, also, the other thing is, even if it's compiled in, I imagine it would be very easy to turn it off, make it controlled by a flag at runtime.
Yeah. I mean,
just like was done with GLX, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, as you say.
GLX indirect.
If the code is implemented correctly, which is always a big if in the X server, then it should be a simple check to reject selecting the big endian. The endian swapping mode is done in the connection setup code. So, you know, just a simple check there to say, oh, if you request endian swapping, we just say no, you're not going to connect. Should be simple.
Yeah. Also, I have some. As far as other improvements, I have a documentation MR improvement for XCB. And what was it? Oh, yeah.
And yeah, you've just seen that in general, there's few people reviewing XCB MRs since.
Oh, yeah. And also, this was an XCB proto one. Right. But also, the extended SHM attach MR and the server termination extension.
Yeah, not followed too closely, but yes.
Ironically, the original authors of XCB are all off doing Rust stuff now instead.
I find that hilarious, but awesome. I mean, using Rust, I think probably from my perspective, probably the single biggest, one of the really awesome improvement for X would be sandboxed X-Wayland. And by that, I mean that if you have something like Flatpak, have X-Wayland run in the context of the Flatpak sandbox, and the compositor connects to each X-Wayland compositor connects to each X-Wayland instance separately. And that way, Flatpaks that rely on X11 can do so without losing sandboxing.
Yeah, honestly, I don't know enough about X-Wayland to actually see what would be involved to do that. But from the few things that I know about it, it looks like it's possible, but well. So I see that Benjamin joined. I don't know if you are available or if you are still listening to Martin talks.
I'm trying to do both, but I guess it would be hard to follow both at the same time.
No, but then we will let you finish listening to Martin talks.
And I'll be able to look at routing later if need be.
We can. So because it really looks like we need to discuss about how the private issues in GitLab are handled when it's security issues. Is it possible to get up to the security advisory and to get a CVID and all this through the private issues, or if we need some mechanism to bridge between both?
Okay. Not sure I have the answers for that, but I can try to.
No, but there are a few things. For example, I don't know who exactly has access to private issues currently. It's all the XOR organization members, or it's final grain?
It depends on the project you're looking at. I don't know exactly. I think private issues are probably, at least for the maintainers of the projects. Well, sysadmins are separate bits because so whenever somebody has sysadmin profile, we can see anything on the cluster on the GitLab server, which means that even if I'm not part of the security advisory team, I would have access to those.
Private issue. The mailing list, basically.
Yeah, yeah, that would be the same. Regarding private issues, I think they're at least for the maintainers, but they should be. I'm not sure if it's for. Let me try to open it to create a new issue, because I'm pretty sure that there is a. So yeah. They say that this issue is confidential and should be only visible to team members with at least reporter access. So that means that anybody who is a developer and is a reporter would have access to the issue.
Okay, so it's quite wide.
So reporter is anyone who can file a bug. So anyone?
No, reporters is something in the middle.
Okay.
I think reporter doesn't matter much in a public project because, of course, you can file bugs whenever you want. But if it's a private project, then you can have reporters who have access to the project, can pull the project, but they cannot participate in a project like a developer can. I think that's the difference. However, what you can do and what we do within Red Hat for this kind of stuff is you can always have a separate group for the security advisory board, and we can request people to open issues there and have only a few set of people to have access to those issues. It's maybe not the best, but at least that would give you a private space where you can actually discuss with people without having to rely on a mailing list.
For me, one of the issues is to get a way to have the binary distribution maintainers aware of the security issues and to get them access to the patches. And so one, if we switch to
testing.
Yes.
Can people hear me?
Yes.
Okay, just checking.
For me, one of the questions is if we continue using email-based workflow for the patches and to test the patches, or if it's possible to switch to actually create some private branches and have the patches there, and that at some point just merge the private branch to the main branch and do the release when the bug goes public. And if so, how to give package maintainers the access to the private branch so that they can prepare the binary packages in advance? Because I think that currently this is what they are doing, but I don't really know. I've never worked with Canonical or Red Hat or anyone on those. For the OpenBSD side, I know that I do apply the patches to a private tree, and I just merge them to the official public XOR3 when the bug becomes public, and then only after that the people who build the binary packages for OpenBSD build them from what was committed to CVS. But for other projects, I don't know if they wait for the public release to rebuild their packages or if they start building from a private tree where the patch was already applied.
It's going to be tough to do with GitLab, I think.
Okay.
I was going to suggest patching GitLab, like making an upstream MR for them because open source.
Good luck with that. Not mentioning, because I mean, this needs some very deep change in everything. Right now, I'm not even sure that you can open a merge request that would be private. This is something we'd have to check. But having private merge requests seems to be pretty much conflicting with the way the merge request is exposed by GitLab right now. Right now, whenever you open a merge request, the branch gets actually included in the main tree, in the master tree, in the origin tree. And whenever you, if you just pull the origin tree, you're able to look at all of the merge requests that are there. So basically, if you create private merge requests, I'm not sure you would be able to have those finer grain access. So that's going to be a little bit complex to do. We are starting to use GitLab internally at Red Hat. It's not news. I think we already advertised that in Linux Plumber, or at least we will explain that next week in Linux Plumber. For all of those CVEs, what we're going to have is we're going to have some separate private trees on GitLab that would have all of the people that needs, I mean, for the very embargoed one, the one that where only people need to know, like Spectre on Meltdown, they would have, we would create a special tree for them, include all of the people that needs to have access to that. And then we would basically create a merge request or directly merge the result into the main tree when it goes public. So that's not so much different to what we are doing right now with a private branch, with a private tree. But I don't think GitLab would solve all of these there. Okay. We can always request them to do this kind of stuff, but it seems like it's very much the low-level part of GitLab are very, very not toward this goal.
Okay, so we would need to maintain a separate project for the repositories with security issues and work there and just create the network request when it goes public.
I think that would be the easiest. That would be the thing that you can do right now. So yeah, you create a, like either under free desktop or in the, we can create a group like Xorg security board. You can clone every project you want there. You can include the merge request for the CVE. We can have a discussion with the people involved in there. And then you can release the tree there. When I mean you can yes. Publish the merge request.
And then the issue is to figure out how to move private issues from the main repository to this repository.
Yeah, you can do that really easily with GitLab. You can move the issues. So that's yeah, that's a one way of doing it.
Okay, nice. Then. So yes, then we will just need to prod the vendors present on XR security to check with them if this way of preparing the patches would fit their current workflow.
Yeah, and what I would even suggest, I mean, if you have the regular CVEs, that the ones like there is a buffer overflow and this kind of stuff, well, you can just use one generic project. But if you have one very kind of not difficult, but the ones that do not need to get out of a handful of people, you just create a specific project for that particular CVE that you name it like, I don't know, XKB dash CVE dash something. Yeah. You can open to how many people you want. Like for instance, if you want to share the patch with Red Hat or with Suzy, with OpenBSD, you can open those people, you can invite them to be part of this project. So they would have access to just this particular bug. But whenever the CVE is done, then you just kill the project and those people won't have access to this anymore.
Yes, that's nice too. Okay, so we have some ideas on how to move forward, and maybe at some point we'll see if it's possible to move the, because currently One of the things that I'm a bit worried about is that all the traditional X server and libraries and reports go to the XORG security mainlist. Because as I said yesterday, we never see any issues concerning Wayland, the library, Weston, WL root, and so on. Are there no issues, or are they just handled somewhere else?
I can actually speak to that one. I found two vulnerabilities in libWayland server recently. They're both still embargoed, so I'm not going to mention what they are, but I will say that I filed them both as confidential issues on GitLab because I couldn't think of a better place to do it.
Okay, so they are not directly by the maintainers?
I assume so. As I said, I did that because there was not an obvious security. There wasn't any sort of information as to what else to do. But I think like that was the best idea I could come up with at the time because there wasn't any sort of information that said, please send security issues to X.
Yeah, they should have something like that. But yeah, we knew something was going on because the Wayland developers asked us how to get a CVE ID assigned. But yeah, XORG security doesn't know the details, just that they have a CVE ID.
Yeah, if
such things should instead be sent to XORG security, I guess the answer is that needs to be documented in the Wayland, in like a security.md file or something in the Wayland repos.
Yeah, first we need to agree with the maintainers of the various Wayland library. And this makes me realize that I forgot to regenerate my slide with the topics, because one topic that I added before starting the workshop is that is the documentation topic. We need to update the wiki about the procedures. And also, for example, in the procedure that is documented in the wiki, we update the wiki whenever an advisory is produced. But I don't know who is still able to edit the old wiki. Alan and myself, for sure, we are able to do that. But I don't know about any new maintainers, even the current X server maintainer. I'm not sure if he has access to the wiki. And so,
are you talking about the general XORG wiki,
or yes,
the specific one for the?
No, the general XORG wiki.
So everybody who still has SSH access to the old server should be able to have the wiki there. The one thing that the Nuvo project did previously was to migrate their wiki that was hosted on XORG, I think, to a GitLab Pages environment, which allow everybody to contribute with merge requests and all this kind of stuff way more easily. So maybe that's something you can actually bootstrap or request us to do. And the idea is just that we would host the wiki instead of using the old WikiWiki or whatever it is, as a GitLab page.
Yes, I think this is already noted somewhere, that's on a to-do list.
Maybe.
Since when?
But certainly if we're setting up an XORG security group in GitLab for this, we should be able to have a wiki sub-project under there. Or a wiki replacement GitLab pages sub-project.
Yeah, and you can even have we can very easily create a a DNS entry, like security.x.org or something like that, or security.phrase.org, that would point at your wiki. So that would be very easy to do.
Also, I think there's a dot well known for security contacts. Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure how it's used, but yes, that does exist.
Right. And given how poorly we're doing at keeping up with just the Xorg security issues, I'm not sure if we want to take on Wayland and everything else on freedesktop.org, but we should certainly encourage them to document how security issues should be reported to those projects, yes, so people don't have to guess.
Yeah, I don't want to have to handle all those. It's just that it should be documented how they are handled, and to make sure that all the maintainers have a few IDs and have the pointer to the list of the checklist of what needs to be done whenever a security issue is reported. If they already know all of this because they are also maintaining other projects, then it's perfectly fine. But if they are newcomers and need some assistance, and then we can help them a bit with that. We have a number of documents already written. So I think we basically covered all the topics that I had in mind. I don't know if someone wants to add something or...
I think for Rust, I think given the general state of X and how the odds of making huge, very large changes to X are very low, I mean, using Rust and X would be great, but I also think that would also be a very large change, and I don't really see it happening with the current amount of labor. I think something that'd be more likely to be viable would be using Rust in Wayland compositors. And I'm thinking specifically in either libWayland server or especially like WL roots, because that seems to be where most compositors are using WL roots as their underlying library.
Yes, that's probably more likely to happen in the next future. I was mentioning Rust in the Xcode as a possible way perhaps to attract new people, saying, well, there is an existing code base that would be fun to convert to Rust. If you want to help, welcome, and see what comes out of this. Most of the system that I know should be able to use some Rust at some point. Yesterday I heard that Lisa is considering starting using Rust. So, for example, for OpenBSD, this will cause some issues. But if we manage to either get Rust in base or or move the Xenocara to port, then the issue is fixed. And moving Xenocara in ports is something that I'm considering for some time now. I have some working prototypes, so it's not really complicated.
I was going to say, I'd love to see Rust in OpenBSD base, but that's completely off topic.
Well, yes, someone that's private, but there are some people who have made some demonstration that it's not that difficult, even in the kernel.
But certainly as Firefox and GNOME already require Rust, if you are actually running an X desktop, you probably already have some support for it.
Yeah, libRSVG requires it,
and right?
Yes.
Most everything requires libRSVG, and
Cygin is still able to build the old C code when Rust is not available. But yes, in most of the systems and most of the architectures, we already have a full Rust support. Just Risk C4 is not yet ready.
I mean, I'd love to see Rust in libxml2. Not least because that would make Rust a dependency of DNF, and I want to see Rust in DNF for other reasons, but anyway. That's again totally off topic, so. I think Rust in X would, like, Rustifying X, I think it would be an interesting project, but I also think that it might very well take away time that could be better spent on deprecating X and transitioning projects away from it.
Yes, that's a trade-off.
Because I think ultimately X needs to at some point be officially deprecated, like X11.
Yes, that's. We can say that there is no more new development, but and the support for X11 is still going to run for a number of years, just because companies like Red Hat have some contractual needs to support X for the next, I don't know how many years, as part of the currency.
The problem isn't when all the desktops are fully Wayland, it's when everybody's custom applications that they've been running for 20 years internally are all converted.
Hence why I was thinking of the, like, sandboxed X Wayland kind of thing, or like isolated X. Like if somehow X Wayland could be made a sidecar of some sort so that it's like, ideally, perhaps this is, like, really far off, but maybe could even be embedded into XCB and or Xlib. That would be, like, a totally weird idea. But,
well, I think there were some projects like that where they got rid of the client server part and try to build X application that were directly running, but I don't remember if it's for Android or what. It was far from complete, of course.
Yeah.
Because the hard part there is the array. Currently, there are two protocols in every X application, the X11 socket and the DRI.
There's also the issue that X clients expect information that Wayland simply does not provide.
Well, anyways, I think we will try to write down some small projects for the summer of code or the Xorg coding projects, which I forgot the name of the Evoc. Well, I remember Evoc, but I don't remember what it means. Projects, so that if there are students somewhere who would like to play with rewriting parts of X in Rust, they can play with that. The XCB project started a bit like that. It was some university project that ended up being included in the main X code.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think we've had the converting the server-side XCB in the project ideas list for a decade, and no one's ever jumped on it.
This is why I was thinking that maybe adding some Rust on top of it would attract new people.
Yeah.
So I think we are done for this workshop. Again, unless someone wants to add something, we still have some time if there are more topics to discuss. But what I had in mind with mainly discussed what I wanted to discuss. I'm a bit sad that there was no more participation, but I was somehow expecting that. Thanks, everyone, for coming.